Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. Later, we will conduct a question-and-answer session, and instructions will follow at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star then zero on your touch-tone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. At this time, I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Dr. Carolyn Messner, Director of Education and Training at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, Carolina, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect workshop, Progress in the Treatment of Multiple Myeloma. Now, today's program is a collaborative effort between Cancer Care and many other cancer organizations. And it really is because of that collaboration that we've been able to reach so many of you and also your interest in this topic. So we have on the call today over 796 participants. And you come from all over the United States, from all different regions, and we also have international participants from Canada, India, Indonesia, Jamaica, Jordan, St. Lucia, Sudan, and Venezuela, and the United Kingdom. So you really come from all over the world, and it's like a bit of a global call, actually. And I'd like to turn your attention for a moment to all the materials that you received from Cancer Care. In those materials is an outline that our speakers have prepared. There's information about our speakers and all of our different collaborating organizations. And the collaborating organizations are there as resources for you to call and to have also, as well as having information about cancer care. There also is an evaluation form, and I would ask you each to take a moment and complete that evaluation form. You're the best people to tell us what programs and topics we should offer. I can't think of a better group of consultants for that. So please tell us what you'd like us to offer going forward. Indeed, the topic of multiple myeloma is a very one that many of you have recommended, asked us to do over and over again, and that feedback enables us to do these programs. So I appreciate that, and we'll look forward to your feedback and any other topics that you recommend. Now, this program was made possible by support from Onyx Pharmaceuticals and Celgene Corporation. I really want to thank them for their support today. Now, we have wonderful speakers on our program today, and I want to start by introducing our first speaker. And our first speaker is Dr. Jeffrey Wolf. Dr. Wolf is Professor of Medicine, Director, Myeloma Program, Division of Hematology Oncology, Blood and Marrow Transplantation, University of California at San Francisco. And Dr. Wolf is going to address an overview of multiple myeloma, current standard of care, new treatment approaches, and quality of life concerns. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Dr. Wolf.
Thank you, Dr. Messner. And welcome, everybody. Multiple myeloma has become a disease that's gotten a lot of attention because of the progress we've made, fortunately, in this disease. It is a cancer of plasma cells. These are the cells in the body that make antibodies that protect us from infection. If one of these cells becomes malignant and produces a clone or a large group, maybe a trillion cells just like itself, these cells can do tremendous damage. They produce a single protein rather than the tens of thousands of different proteins that they should be producing. They produce a single protein that's dysfunctional. It doesn't do any good, but it can do a lot of harm. It can. They can also produce substances that erode the bones. So a very common problem with patients with myeloma is they have fractures of the spine or of their ribs or other bones. These proteins can also cause kidney problems and kidney failure, and unfortunately some patients wind up on dialysis. The overgrowth of these cells in the bone marrow can produce anemia or low blood counts. The leaching of calcium from the bones can cause a high calcium condition. The deposition of these proteins in nerves can cause peripheral neuropathies or even central neuropathies. These are problems with nerves that can cause numbness, tingling, even pain. And because these patients are not making normal amounts of these antibodies that protect them from infection, infections are a particularly big problem in this patient group. Current standard of care dictates that where possible, we achieve a complete remission. This means that we try to make the disease go away for all intents and purposes. That is, when somebody's in a complete remission, their bone marrow continues to look normal, their proteins in the blood are normal, their blood counts are normal, and even though it looks for all purposes as though this patient does not have any disease, we know that it's still there and it's hiding because patients relapse at some point later down the road and need further therapy. But we do attempt to achieve a complete remission because in study after study after study, we see that patients do better when they do achieve a complete remission. If it's not possible, if the patient has a lot of side effects, if the drugs just aren't quite good enough, Getting close to complete remission might be almost as good, something we call a near complete remission or a very good partial remission. The way we get there is with multiple rounds of therapy. There is a period called induction therapy in which we administer some of the newer drugs, such as lenalidomide or Revlimid, bortezomib, which is also called Velcade, dexamethasone, which is a steroid, or older drugs such as Cytoxan, which is an old alkylating drug from 40 years ago. These combinations often lead to control of the disease, but not a complete remission. If they do achieve a complete remission, that's wonderful, but we believe that we need more therapy beyond this initial period. There is some controversy about what the initial best therapy is. We argue amongst ourselves regarding two-drug regimens or three-drug regimens, but that really is between you and your physician to ultimately decide on. In general, we follow the initial therapy, at least for younger patients. That means anybody perhaps under 65 or in some institutions under 70. We follow that with an autologous stem cell transplant. That means using the patient's own cells. So it's not as dangerous as what we call an allogeneic transplant where you use cells from somebody else. And we give the patient a high dose of chemotherapy that reduces the amount of myeloma, and we rescue their bone marrow with cells that we've already stored. This is often followed by what we call maintenance therapy. Now, this is another area that's somewhat controversial. In the last 2 weeks, there was a very good study published in the New England Journal of Medicine that showed the benefit of maintenance therapy with the drug lenalidomide or Revlimid. Other drugs can be used for maintenance as well, but this is the first really large study that showed the benefit. And the benefit of maintenance therapy was that the patients who took the drug versus those who didn't actually went longer before the disease came back again, and a portion of them actually lived longer because they took the lenalidomide. This is somewhat controversial because there is almost an identical study done in France that shows that there is prolongation of control of the disease, but not necessarily an improvement in survival, how long people live. So that's why it remains controversial in our field. There's also controversy there because in this study, and indeed in some other studies, it appears that adding lenalidomide to the autologous transplant may increase the risk of yet another kind of cancer. We know that patients with one kind of cancer, not just myeloma, but one kind of cancer, have a higher risk of a second cancer. And when they go through a transplant, that raises the risk a little bit. And then when they take other drugs afterwards, such as lenalidomide, it raises that risk a little bit more. The total may still be only 4 or 5 people out of 100, and this is a number of years down the road, but it's something to consider, and that's part of what makes this area controversial. Along with the specific therapy for the disease, there is supportive therapy, and I'll mention some of this. I know that Dr. Rajay is going to comment on this also. Because patients with myeloma have bone lesions, lytic lesions, holes in their bone, we administer to these patients what are called bisphosphonates. The most common drugs are Iridia or zoledronate. This is pimidronate or Zomida. This helps put calcium back in bones and prevents fractures. We also give our patients calcium and vitamin D along with that to help reconstitute their bones. In addition, we protect them from infection. We regularly put our patients on either acyclovir or valacyclovir or Valtrex because this has been shown to prevent shingles, which is a reactivation of the chickenpox virus in a nerve, and it can be quite painful, and we like to prevent that. When patients are on lenalidomide and steroids, they have a higher risk of blood clot in their legs. We put them on aspirin or other blood-thinning medications. When they have pain in their spine, we often resort to physical procedures. Our surgeons do something called kyphoplasty or vertebroplasty, and Dr. Rajay will be speaking about this. What are some of the newer approaches? Well, these drugs are so new that we're still trying to figure out combinations of the drugs to figure out what the best combination is for induction therapy or initial therapy, what the best combination is for maintenance therapy, what is the role of transplant with all these new therapies available. We're also discovering that whereas we made this distinction between younger patients who were eligible for transplant and older patients who were not necessarily eligible for transplant, more and more we're seeing an overlap here and a blending so that older patients can get some of the therapies we give to younger patients. We just have to adjust the doses and make sure that we don't give them too much drug to make it too toxic. There are also new drugs being developed all the time, and it's a very exciting area for this. We have a new proteasome inhibitor, carfilzomib, that may be available this year. We're waiting to hear from the FDA. Pomalidomide is a new IMID, like lenalidomide or Revlimid, and that may be available this year. There are other drugs that are still in phase 2 or phase 3 testing, and Dr. Rajay will talk about research, such as elotuzumab, which is an antibody which may be available in the next few years and looks exciting. And there is a resurrected drug, bendamustine, which the East Germans developed 30 years ago, and we're just rediscovering now that seems to be helpful. So all these new drugs are being studied and hopefully will be accessible to our patients. What are some of the quality of life issues that our patients deal with? Well, certainly the most common problem, I would say, is bone pain from the disease itself that has caused compression fractures in the spine or rib fractures, and Dr. Rajay will address that. Peripheral neuropathy is a particular problem in our patients and seems to be more common than with other diseases, so that when we use a drug such as bortezomib or Velcade or thalidomide or even some lenalidomide, patients develop numbness, tingling, and some pain sometimes. This is because patients with myeloma are predisposed to having neuropathy. Some of them even start with neuropathy. We've done nerve conduction studies on some of our patients before they ever received any drugs, and some of them already have abnormalities, and this is because of what I mentioned earlier with the proteins attacking the nerve sheaths of these patients. So once we start these drugs, it's no wonder that many of them develop this complication. Amazingly, in the last year, we have discovered that we can give bortezomib, for example, in a different fashion. Instead of giving it intravenously, we can give it subcutaneously under the skin, and the incidence or the tendency for patients to develop neuropathy is much reduced by giving it subcutaneously, and we here in San Francisco only give the drug subcutaneously. We've also discovered that we can give the drug, bortezomib, on a weekly basis rather than twice a week. We don't tend to start with once a week, but ultimately we may switch to once a week because the response rates seem to be the same and the frequency of neuropathy seems to go down when we do it once a week. We also try hard to minimize other side effects from our therapy, such as nausea and constipation and fatigue. We try to deal with this ahead of time by using prophylactic medicines. Ultimately, we really need our patients to be partners in all of this. We at UCSF, and I know Dr. Rajay in Boston, believe that our patients should be well-educated in the disease, and that's one of the purposes of this phone call, because we want them to understand why we do it and when we do it, and we want them to report back to us. We want them to keep adequate records so that if they ever go for a second opinion, they've got a well-laid-out story of where they've been with their illness. And finally, a positive attitude is always very, very helpful. We are doing so well in the field of myeloma, and patients are living longer and longer and longer, that I think there is really good reason to be optimistic. And with that, I'll conclude, let the other doctors speak.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Wolf, for a very informative and comprehensive presentation. Thank you. And our next speaker is Dr. Nupur Rajay, and Dr. Rajay is Associate Professor, Department of Medicine, Harvard Medical School, Director, Center for Multiple Myeloma, Division of Hematology and Oncology, Massachusetts General Hospital. And Dr. Rajay is going to address how clinical trials contribute to treatment options, practical tips for symptom and pain management, communicating with your healthcare team, and physical activity concerns and tips. It's my pleasure to turn the program over to Dr. Rajay.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's a pleasure to be here this afternoon. Dr. Wolf has given us a very nice overview of myeloma, and as you've just heard, the use of some of these novel treatments which we have now have completely transformed how we take care of myeloma, and we look to myeloma more as a chronic disease. And because of this, it is actually a very exciting time in research. We're excited about all of the drugs which we have, which are currently approved, and we have six of these in some combination or the other. And I would argue that the expedited approval process has been largely because of your willingness, patients' willingness to participate in clinical trials. In the past year, as Dr. Wolf was pointing out, the focus has kind of shifted from how best we can combine some of these drugs so that combining bortezomib or Velcade with lenalidomide and with additional agents with the goal of really transforming this chronicity and keeping this chronicity and controlling the disease even longer and hopefully using the word cure sometime soon. We've seen excellent efficacy and tolerability of these combinations. We've been able to incorporate them in our induction treatments, in our transplant strategies. We're now using terminologies such as consolidation strategies, which come right after transplant. And we're also using maintenance strategies, as Dr. Wolf has already pointed out. But I think what's even more exciting than all of what's already going on is the multiple novel targeted therapies that are demonstrating anti-myeloma activity, both in the laboratory setting, so in preclinical studies, as well as in early phase studies. Some of the ones to mention now are we have novel proteasome inhibitors. So you heard about Velcade and bortezomib. This is approved. We are hoping that the next one, carfilzomib, will be approved soon. But now we have embarked upon using oral proteasome inhibitors, which would be the next new big thing in myeloma. The other classes of drugs which we are excited about include HDAC inhibitors, mTOR inhibitors, CDK inhibitors, and some of the monoclonal antibodies, one of which Dr. Wolf has already mentioned. Novel single agents of great promise and on the verge of approval include the new proteasome inhibitor carfilzomib, which I just mentioned. This has shown remarkable activity in treating patients with myeloma who've been heavily pre-treated, and it's also, in fact, shown some activity in patients who've had bortezomib and have then become refractory to bortezomib. Another exciting agent, which again Dr. Wolf mentioned, was pomalidomide. This is the newest IMID or the newest immunomodulatory drug coming after thalidomide and lenalidomide. And again, this has shown remarkable activity in very, very heavily pretreated patients. Several combination approaches are currently under investigation. We've combined HDAC inhibitors, as I mentioned. The ones which are further most in development are drugs called panobinostat and vorinostat, which have been combined with bortezomib. And this is based on the rationale that they target different cellular pathways, and when combined, they actually have a synergistic effect against the myeloma. Other combinations which have come out of laboratory science include combinations with mTOR inhibitors, where we've combined drugs like everolimus with lenalidomide, also combined it with bortezomib, again based on proteomic data in the lab. Others, which I've already mentioned, are CDK inhibitors. One of them, which is furthermost in clinical development right now, is a pan-CDK inhibitor called AT7519, which we are combining with Velcade as we speak. Antibody-based therapy has always been of great interest in myeloma. One of them, called CNTO-328, is an antibody against interleukin-6. It has shown efficacy when combined again with bortezomib. Other antibodies which are furthermore in development include an antibody against a protein called BAF, now also referred to as tabalumab. This is in clinical trials. The other one mentioned by Dr. Wolf is elotuzumab, directed against a protein called CS1. Both these proteins are produced either by the tumor microenvironment, that is the surrounding cells, not quite the myeloma cells, but the cells which surround the myeloma cells, or the tumor cells, as in the case of CS1. Ultimately, our hope is obviously going to be able to carry out gene and protein expression studies on individual patients so that we can come up with really patient-specific treatments or designer treatments. And, you know, we're not far away from that. And an example of this would be we've begun to look at mutations in specific patients' myelomas. One such example is the BRAF mutation. We already have a drug which can target this BRAF mutation. It's called vemurafenib, and this is a drug which we're going to be using in people with multiple myeloma who have this very specific mutation. Now, because of all of this rapid evolution in available therapies, I would really encourage each one of you to seek out clinical trials. We are where we are with myeloma progress, largely because of patients being willing and able to participate in these clinical trials. So it's absolutely critical that you communicate with your healthcare provider and see what is available at your cancer centers and determine whether or not that particular trial would be appropriate for you. Carolyn will point you to certain websites which will allow you to better understand what clinical trials are available close to where you are specifically getting treated. There is the NCI clinical trials website as well, which will give you information on all of the different trials available to different phases of myeloma and myeloma progression. Shifting gears now, I will focus basically on symptom and pain management, and then finally focus on quality of life issues. Again, Dr. Wolf has covered some of this, but I do think, underscoring the importance of some and things which you, in fact, can participate in very actively is going to help a long way. And this focus is largely because of myeloma being transformed into a very chronic disease. As a consequence, symptom control has now taken center stage. It is critically important that you again engage with your care team and communicate your symptoms so that they will be able to help you most effectively. And your care team should be a team effort. It should be, and you being the focal point of that team. So you're communicating back and forth with your nurses, your social workers, your physicians taking care of you, your infusion room nurses is absolutely critical. It's usually the infusion room nurses who pick up on things, subtle things like neuropathy, etc. So having that open line of communication really, really helps with allowing your entire team to take better care of you. When thinking about symptoms, I will first focus on those which are related to the myeloma itself. We've heard from Dr. Wolf, the symptoms from the disease may be related to bone itself, which may may be a consequence of the presence of the protein in the blood and the urine. And lastly, you can have symptoms because of the bone marrow infiltration from these myeloma cells. Symptoms of bone pain and anemia remain the most common presenting features, and they occur in more than 80% of people. Other features can include increased calcium levels, kidney problems, and infections. All of these symptoms will obviously be corrected once we treat the underlying myeloma. So it's critically important that you get the anti-myeloma treatment. With the new drugs available now, we're very, very good at achieving those responses, which again Dr. Wolf has mentioned. There are, however, certain supportive care measures which are recommended and which will help you tolerate the treatment better and will also help alleviate some of these symptoms as well. One of the strategies for bone disease, which has already been mentioned, includes bisphosphonates. One can use either pimidronate or zoledronic acid, and this is, in fact, recommended for anybody who has symptomatic multiple myeloma and is undergoing treatment for their myeloma. These drugs are bone-strengthening agents, and they've been shown in large randomized trials to decrease the incidence of complications such as pain, fractures, need for radiation. Most recently, there's been a very large study which was done in the UK, and this demonstrated the benefits of using zoledronic acid or Zumira in multiple myeloma patients, not only with respect to their bone disease, but folks who got this Zumira actually lived longer as well. There are certain other local measures because bone disease can, in fact, cause a lot of morbidity, certainly can cause a lot of pain. And one of the commonest sites of bone involvement in myeloma tends to be the vertebral bodies. And patients can end up getting fractures of these vertebral bodies, which can result in a fair amount of pain. Certain local measures like vertebral augmentation procedures can be undertaken. It's very institutional. institution dependent. For example, in Dr. Wolf's institution, it's probably the surgeon who does it. Here, where I work out of, it's an intervention radiologist who undertakes some of these procedures. And these are essentially vertebroplasties or kyphoplasties, which are outpatient procedures where you go in and out on the same day under fluoroscopic guidance. One can go into that vertebral body and either inject a balloon with cement or inject some cement into that area. And this really does help with improvement of pain control. Excitingly, we have several new agents as well, several new drugs for the treatment of myeloma-related bone disease. Bisphosphonates are good at controlling the complications associated with bone disease, but we are beginning to use what are referred to as anabolic bone agents. These are agents which can actually hopefully help with bone healing, and so the future, I do believe, is going to be bright, and we're going to be able to combine some of these anabolic agents with the bisphosphonates, which are here to stay. The other issue which we see with myeloma, which is fairly common, is fatigue, and it can present as a symptom for myeloma at the outset itself, and it usually is as a result of anemia. Erythropoietin, which is a growth factor for red blood cells, can sometimes be used to control this. Again, treatment of the underlying myeloma in itself can help correct this anemia. Many physicians do use EPO in patients where hemoglobin is less than 10 grams. The use of drugs like EPO should be considered carefully, and there may be some risks associated, such as thrombosis, and also specifically when it's being considered in use with other drugs like thalidomide, lenalidomide, and chemotherapy. I think it's important to discuss this with your healthcare provider, but certainly if used appropriately can be of benefit in people with respect to the anemia. Kidney dysfunction is not uncommon in patients, and keeping up with adequate hydration, so really hydrating yourself, drinking between 2 and 3 liters of fluid a day is a good thing. Keeping away from certain drugs like the NSAIDs would be a good thing for your kidneys. Finally, myeloma patients, as again Dr. Wolf has mentioned, are at a risk of infections, and patients should take the onset of fever seriously, report it to your healthcare providers, and, you know, sooner rather than later try and be on antibiotics. Although these drugs which we've talked about, all of these novel agents, are very effective and are generally extremely well tolerated, I do think it's very important to understand some of their side effects and, again, communicate some of the symptoms as a consequence of these treatments to your healthcare provider, because your team will then help or put in place measures which will help mitigate some of these side effects. For example, agents like thalidomide, like lenalidomide, can predispose patients to blood clots. And depending on whether or not you have certain risk factors for these blood clots or whether you're on any associated chemotherapies, generally we would recommend being on a blood thinner, either aspirin or a stronger blood thinner such as a low molecular weight heparin or Coumadin. Again, decrease in blood counts is sometimes common with lenalidomide, and therefore checking these blood counts and adjusting lenalidomide doses is recommended if the counts tend to be low. Bortezomib, again, can cause neuropathy, which results in pain and loss of sensation. Once this sets in, this can certainly be a problem. There are very specific guidelines on how to use bortezomib in the context of neuropathy. And I think the biggest thing which happened last year was for us to be able to switch from the IV form of bortezomib to the subcutaneous form, or giving bortezomib under the skin. And by just doing this simple maneuver, one can reduce this incidence of neuropathy by about 2/3. Symptomatic treatment for neuropathy, we've typically used drugs like gabapentin or Neurontin. We've used Cymbalta and Lyrica, and these tend to be useful adjuncts in the setting of neuropathy in the context of myeloma. We do like to supplement with vitamins as well, so vitamin B, B6, and B12 vitamins are generally useful. Neuropathy is also common with thalidomide. It tends to be a lot rarer with lenalidomide, so all of these things could help while you're on drugs like thalidomide as well. Finally, I think I cannot underscore the importance of keeping up with physical therapy and exercise, because you're going to be able to tolerate your treatments better, you're going to have less of the side effects, and things like this are actually good for both neuropathy as well as bone disease. So being active, doing physical therapy is something which should be absolutely encouraged. Given the complexity of both the symptoms and the available therapies for myeloma, I think it's critically important that you partner with your healthcare team, communicate your symptoms, communicate your concerns with your healthcare team, and by doing so, I think you are going to be in a position to be able to manage myeloma in the best possible way. And again, participating in the available clinical trials will help inform not only all of us and improve outcomes with what's going on with your myeloma right now, but I do think it's going to impact how we take care of myeloma in the future. I'll stop with that. Thank you.
Well, thank you very much, Dr. Ashe, for an excellent presentation, and I know there'll be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you so much. And our next speaker is Ms. Sonia Pacheco, and Ms. Pacheco is she's an oncology social worker, and she's coordinator at Cancer Care, and she is going to address the free psychosocial support services that you can access from Cancer Care. It's my pleasure now to turn the program over to Ms. Pacheco.
Thank you, Carolyn, and it's a pleasure to be part of this telephone educational workshop. I'd like to start to talk about the importance of having support when you're diagnosed with multiple myeloma and how Cancer Care and our hotline could be able to help you. As we learn from today's workshop, there's a lot of information about multiple myeloma to take in, and sometimes it's hard to understand what it means for you. Oncology social workers are trained in how a diagnosis of cancer, like multiple myeloma, affects the person, their family, partners, and friends. We are trained to help people with cancer and their family track the problems that comes along with the disease, such as practical and financial demands, physical changes, and the social and emotional impact of multiple myeloma. Adjusting to and coping with diagnosis of multiple myeloma is an important part of your journey that you don't have to face alone. Cancer Care helps in many ways, such as practical and financial need. Cancer Care has a special transportation grant called Door-to-Door that will help with the cost of transportation for those diagnosed with multiple myeloma. We could also offer you other financial assistance resources. Our emotional support services are provided by licensed oncology social workers in various settings, such as telephone, education workshops, group support. We realize that cancer affects the whole person and the entire family. Asking for help or contacting a social worker for counseling or by joining a support group is a sign of strength. Through our counseling service, it offers you the time to talk about what your personal needs are, concerns, and questions may be. Counseling can help you explore the tools you need in order to cope. For many people living with cancer, talking to a social worker relieves them of the stress of holding it all in and sheltering loved ones from their struggles. Cancer Care offers a variety of support groups as well. In addition to offering a support group for people with cancer, we also offer support groups for family members, partners, caregivers, and loved ones. Many people find being in a support group a way to connect with others who are going through similar or have similar problems. We offer telephone and online support group. Individual counseling and family and group supports are a safe place where you could talk about your cancer, your concern, and your fears. These connections help lessen the isolation that many people may experience. Feeling emotionally well helps you better deal with the diagnosis of multiple myeloma and the treatment you face. All of our services are provided completely free of charge. If you'd like to speak with an oncology social worker, please contact 1-800-813-4673, or you can visit our website at www.cancercare.org for more information. And in addition, as you well know, our Connected Educational Workshop provides both disease-specialized information, such as today's workshop, and workshop on coping with the physical and emotional impact of cancer. Our fact sheets and booklets are packed with information and treatment for the latest coping strategies to help people diagnosed with cancer and those who care for them. These are two tools that could help you. Again, all of these materials are available free of charge. Please remember that you're not alone. that while we may not eliminate the problems you experience, we are here for you, and Cancer Care Services are here to help you. Thank you for your attention and the opportunity to speak with you today.
Well, thank you so much, Ms. Pacheco. Excellent presentation and an excellent review of all the services that are accessible from Cancer Care. And now we have time for questions, and I want to thank our speakers for making that possible. And we have lots of time for questions, and so I'm going to ask Carolina to bring all of our speakers on board, and then if you would explain to the audience how to queue up for questions, and we'll let the questions begin. And if we don't get to your question, or if you think of a question like tomorrow or next week, or you need some services from us, just call the 1-800-813-4673 number and contact one of our social workers here. And I'll repeat that number again, and that number is also in all your materials. Carolina?
Thank you. If you wish to ask a question at this time, please press star, then 1 on your touch-tone telephone. If your question has been answered or you wish to withdraw your question, please press the pound key. Those of you on the web may submit a question by clicking Ask a Question. We have a question from the line of Mary W. Please go ahead.
My question concerns blood type and multiple myeloma. In our support group, we took a sample, and almost everyone had blood type O. I wonder if the doctors have heard of any research on that.
I can handle that. There are no data supporting blood type and relationship to myeloma. We don't know what causes myeloma, but we are quite certain that it's not more common in patients with blood type O.
Okay, excellent. Thank you. Thanks for that question. Our next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Patricia W. Please go ahead.
Hello. I'm very happy to be with you today. I had a successful stem cell in 2009, and relatively speaking, my disease is under control. The only thing is I have never been able to get my platelets and my anemia back to normal. At the moment, if I'm over 100, that is very successful for me with platelets. The white cells, red cells, the others have gone up a little bit, but I constantly am just right on the border of anemia, and my platelets, as I say, range about 90. But I've been down as low as 30 or 40 a year or two ago.
Well, thank you for that question. Dr. Roche, could you address that question in a general way? And then
Sure. So, no, thank you, Patricia, for that question. So we do see blood counts, one of the side effects of high-dose chemotherapy is blood counts being low in general. Most patients do recover. A platelet count of 90 or 100,000, it is on the lower side, but it's generally a safe platelet count. And my sense is it's just a reflection of the high-dose chemotherapy you've had. Beyond that, if there are any other drugs that you're on which could in fact be decreasing blood counts, that's something we would recommend trying to come off of. But outside of that, this is an unusual problem. It does happen occasionally, and most times we just have to end up following this.
I'd like to reassure the caller, though, that those platelet counts are still quite safe, and
right.
Over time they certainly may improve. It's an unfortunate problem after transplant. Sometimes we don't get adequate engraftment long term.
Excellent. Thank you. And we'll hope you'll take this back to your treating healthcare team, Patricia, and help them also to work with you on this. And some really good information from here. Thank you. Our next question.
Thank you. Our next question is from Brenda S. Please go ahead.
Yes, I was just calling to find out if there is a clinical trial available for somebody that has smoldering myeloma for 14 years, and the only treatment that I have had has been immunoglobulins monthly injection, IV infusion.
Thank you for that question, Brenda. Yes, Dr. Roche?
So that's a really good question, Brenda. And, because we've done so well with myeloma now and because we have some of these drugs which are fairly safe in myeloma, we certainly, smoldering myeloma is an area of active research as we speak. You're going to find a lot of clinical trials in this space right now. Most of the smoldering myeloma trials we are targeting to folks where we believe are going to transform to myeloma sooner rather than later. there are either combination approaches or treatments which we use for myeloma already which are being considered. Some of them include antibody-based treatments, so elotuzumab, which you heard about, we are considering using it in the smoldering setting. We are already using a bone-targeted agent called, it's an anti-DKK1 antibody, which is again being considered for use in the smoldering setting. There's a vaccine trial which is about to open, and this vaccine is a peptide-based vaccine which is going to be looking at certain proteins which are normally expressed on myeloma cells, which include CS1, XBP1, and CD138. So it's a combination of all of those proteins, and we've created a vaccine against those proteins with the goal and the hope being that you get immunized against these proteins and that myeloma will then go away. So there is a lot of activity in this field, and I would urge you to actually go on to some of those websites because I'm pretty sure you're going to be able to find a trial which is appropriate for you.
Thank you. We now have a question from one of our online participants, John, and he, the question is, I have lost 3 inches in the past year since diagnosed with multiple myeloma, yet none of my of the many bone tests and scans show anything wrong with my bones. What else could be contributing to the speedy bone loss? Dr. Roche, could you address that?
Sure. So, you know, losing 3 inches of height is, you know, probably related to bone loss. There's a couple of reasons why you could have it. It may not necessarily always be because of myeloma. It could be because of osteoporosis also. But myeloma bone disease, when you think about it, it is an extreme form of osteoporosis. So it is going to likely be related to thinning of bones. It is very potentially possible that John did not necessarily have all of the imaging techniques which are currently available. So x-rays may not pick up bone disease. It in fact picks up bone disease in about 60 or 70% of patients. But there are other imaging modalities like CAT scans, like PET scans or MRIs, which I believe will tell John why it is that he's lost his height. My sense is it's going to be because of disease in the spine bones. It may not be myeloma disease. It just could be osteoporosis from age.
Thank you. Okay, our next question, Carolina.
Thank you. Our next question is from Nancy S. Please go ahead.
My question is, I've been treated for multiple myeloma since 02, and right now I just have a few side effects from the bortezomib, Zometa. I have osteonecrosis of the jaw, and at this point, they have stopped my Zometa, and I wonder if there would be any other treatment so that I don't fracture any bones.
That's an excellent question. Dr. Wolf, could you address that?
Yeah, unfortunately, our therapies, although very successful with myeloma, since you have now been around for 10 years of therapy, can cause these problems. The osteonecrosis of the jaw related to the bisphosphonates, the Zometa or Iridia that you've had. At this point, there is no specific therapy, but we, you know, your dentist, your oral surgeon will have recommendations in terms of how to deal with the osteonecrosis of the jaw. You shouldn't have problems if your disease is under control with further bone fractures. You should be taking calcium and vitamin D, but avoiding the bisphosphonates at this point.
Excellent. That's a very important question, and I know it's one that often comes up periodically. So thank you. That's an excellent question.
I should also point out that some of the newer agents that Dr. Rajay mentioned for bone health that may be available in the next few years may not have the same problem as causing osteonecrosis of the jaw. On the other hand, it did take us almost a decade of using bisphosphonates before we discovered that was a problem.
So I agree completely with Dr. Wolf. The only thing I would add is, you know, ONJ is, it's kind of a good problem in a funny way. We're seeing it because we're using all of these drugs for so long. What we have begun to do is, for right now, we do have just the bisphosphonates. We're using them less frequently. So the one thing I would add is if there is a risk for bone disease, which really outweighs your ONJ issues, and if your ONJ is now fairly asymptomatic, you can go back to a much lower, gentler dose schedule of the bisphosphonate. But one really has to weigh the risks and benefits of doing that, and one has to weigh the risks and benefits of, or the risks of actually developing problems from bone disease.
Excellent. Now we have a question from one of our online participants. Dr. Wolf mentioned acyclovir that may help in treatment of shingles with a shingles injection available. Is it recommended to take this? Dr. Wolf, could you address
yes.
that?
So it's a complicated, it's a simple question, a complicated answer. The two vaccines that are available right now are live virus vaccines, and we tend to be cautious when using them in patients who are immunocompromised, that is, don't have normal immune systems. Moreover, the vaccine may not work very well, say, immediately after a transplant or while on steroids. So we do keep people on Valtrex or acyclovir for prolonged periods of time. Different centers have different protocols for that. But usually a year after the autologous transplant, patients can tolerate the vaccine, and more we're administering it. And at least in our center, we're doing a study in which we're watching the response, that is the antibody response, and then how effective these vaccines are in the face of myeloma and immune suppression, because they may not be 100% protective. There are a couple of new subunit vaccines that are not live viruses that we will be studying that may be helpful in the future in patients who have immune problems. But I guess the answer at the moment is I tend to still favor the drugs, especially right after a transplant.
Excellent. Thank you. And our next question, Carolina?
Thank you. Our next question is from Juliet W. Please go ahead.
Yes, my only symptom of the myeloma is neuropathy in the feet in one hand. I've been x-rayed and MRIs extensively, so there's no damage. And so it's only been 6 months ago. I was put on Revlimid and the steroid, but I broke out in a rash after one set of treatments. So I'm now on no treatment, but my question is, if I get back on the drugs, will the neuropathy get worse?
Excellent question, Juliet. Thank you so much. Dr. Roche, could you address that question?
So that's,
in a general way, of course.
Yes, absolutely. That's a great question, Julia. And just to, so rashes are fairly common with Revlimid. About 25 to 30% of people get them. I would, at least in my practice, I continue to use Revlimid, and if the rash is not very severe. And oftentimes, if you're on a touch of steroids while you're on Revlimid, one can overcome the side effect of the rash. And Revlimid is quite an effective drug, so that's something one needs to make sure of, that despite using adequate doses of steroids, a lot of times people kind of outgrow that rash piece of things. In terms of neuropathy, as we pointed out earlier on, we're doing a little bit better. There are different ways of giving Velcade now, so Velcade given under the skin doesn't cause neuropathy well, or decreases the incidence of neuropathy fairly significantly. And if it came to a point where your myeloma absolutely needed to be treated, I would consider doing it with the subcutaneous route of administration. The other thing one should consider doing is using kind of weekly schedule as opposed to the recommended schedule of Velcade. And by doing all of these things, one really, really decreases the chances of developing or neuropathy or even worsening existing neuropathy. Some of the newer drugs that we have coming out, specifically the oral proteasome inhibitors. They're not currently available because they're not yet labeled drugs, but we've certainly seen that they don't have the same toxicity as the neuropathy. For example, the pill form of Velcade does not cause neuropathy. So these are few things to consider really when making a decision as to treat, not treat, in the context of neuropathy and also in the context of rashes, because rashes are very common with these drugs.
Excellent. Thank you very much. Our next question, Carolina.
Thank you. Our next question is from Chase P. Please go ahead.
My question has already been answered, I think. I was concerned about the danger of active infection with the vaccine to prevent shingles. And I gather, well, you might just comment again, since our immunity, our resistance to infection is reduced with myeloma, is it too great a risk to take that?
That's a good question, and it merits repeating again. So Dr.
Sure.
Wolf, if she would address that again. Thank you.
Not a problem. Maybe I wasn't clear. So certainly immediately after an autologous stem cell transplant, it makes no sense to attempt the vaccine, especially the live vaccine. One is because of the increased risk of infection, and two is because the immune response won't be good enough to protect you. The controversy is, when would it be appropriate to use the live vaccine? In our institution, we wait a year after an autologous transplant and much longer in an allogeneic transplant, even 2 years. When we have the new non-live vaccines, the risk of infection won't be there, but still the question is, when is it appropriate after the transplant to administer it so that you get a good response so that it is protective? Right now, I think the only sure way of protection, at least for that period after the transplant, is drug therapy with acyclovir or Valtrex. Now, in the non-transplant setting, again, most of our patients are on immunosuppressive drugs. The risk of shingles goes up substantially to, I think, almost 30% when you're on Velcade. And on steroid drugs such as dexamethasone, the risk goes up as well. So that, the response to a vaccine won't be very good in that setting. So I think the role for the live vaccines is limited to maybe those patients in a complete remission a year after an autologous transplant. I'd like to hear from Dr. Rajay on that.
Dr. Rajay, yeah. If you would add to that, what about someone who hasn't started their treatment yet, who's actually, so if you could just put that, because there's
sure.
an online question.
I'll leave that to Napur.
As well, or who actually, so if you could comment on that as well.
So I'll take that, Carolyn. So I agree with you, Jeff. We actually don't use the live attenuated. It is a live attenuated vaccine, but because of what Dr. Wolf is pointing out, the fact that you don't have a normal immune system in myeloma, we typically do not use the shingles vaccine. We prefer to use acyclovir. The other very important piece here is the vaccine, the current chickenpox vaccine gives you a 90% coverage. We already know that with drugs like Velcade, the reactivation with shingles is about 30%, so we don't like taking the risk. And our preference is really to continue with acyclovir, valacyclate, and others, but not use the vaccine. So as of right now, we don't recommend using the live vaccine.
So if you got the vaccine before you ever started therapy and you had some protection, we'd still recommend that you take acyclovir. So it's like belts and suspenders. You need both.
Yes.
Excellent. So I hope that's helpful to everyone. And if anyone else still has a question, please do ask it again. These are very good questions. And also take them back to your treating healthcare team. These are very, very important. And it's a very proactive audience. These are good questions. Excellent. Our next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is from Ruby F. Please go ahead.
Yes. I have a question. I've only been diagnosed with multiple myelosis for about a year. You keep talking about a healthcare team. I don't seem to have a team. I have a doctor who keeps testing. Where and when can I access a team, or where can I get information on how to access a team?
Well, that's a great question, Ruby, and I'm going to talk with you after the call, but we're going to address in a general way who is this team that we've been mentioning. And Dr. Roche, could you comment on that?
So the team essentially is you are very much a part of the team, and besides you, Ruby, it's your doctor, the nurse who takes care of you, the nurse who gives you the treatment. There is always, most institutions will have a social worker. We generally have those involved with our patient care, so there's generally a social worker if you have any kind of issues in terms of transportation back and forth from the clinic. And the other piece of this team is folks from within your family, or the person who brings you to your clinic visits, the person who brings you back and forth. So all of these comprise your team. And I think all of them have one common interest at hand, which is make you feel better and make you make the myeloma go away. So that would be your healthcare team.
Thank you. Now, I have another question from our online participants. Dr. Roche said that multiple myeloma is almost considered a chronic condition. Could you say more about that, Dr. Roche?
So, we've been very fortunate, Carolyn, and this has happened in the last 10 years or so, where we've had all of these newer drugs. With the newer drugs, as an earlier caller called in, patients have myeloma for years now. When I say years, it's 7, 8, 9, 10 plus years. So certainly we've made this disease chronic. And it's largely because of all of the different drugs we have available. The one thing to remember is, Dr. Wolf talked about treatments. We start off with induction treatments, transplant, maintenance, no transplant in certain cases. But the natural history of myeloma is that you're going to go into a nice remission, you're going to enjoy a remission, but the disease does come back at some point. It does need retreatment, which is where all of these clinical trials come in, newer drugs come in, and repeatedly treating, you do end up needing repeated treatments during the course of your disease. But by doing so, one has been able to transform this so that people are able to live with the disease for fairly long periods of time.
Excellent. Well, I want to thank all of our speakers today. You have really been extraordinary in answering a lot of questions, and I want to thank all of you who've asked such wonderful questions, both on the telephone and online, and all of you who've been listening as well. Now, I do want to remind everyone this is a one-hour education program, and that in planning a program like this, we recognize that you all have many needs that go far beyond the scope of a one-hour program. So with that in mind, I would just like to review again with you all the services that you can access from Cancer Care. Now, Cancer Care has a staff of 45 master's level trained oncology social workers, and we're here to provide a host of services from practical and financial assistance. And I do want to highlight our door-to-door program, which is a specific program developed for people living with multiple myeloma who have transportation assistance needs. And it's a more generous transportation grant than some of our others, so I think I would definitely, for people with multiple myeloma, want you to be aware of that program. And you can simply call our 800 number to access that service. In addition to the practical and financial assistance, we also offer counseling services or a chance to talk with one of our social workers here. We also offer support groups, both on the telephone and online. And, of course, we have these workshops, and we have fact sheets and booklets, and we also have a very active website that you can visit. Most importantly, as we conclude the program today, I don't want anyone to feel that you're alone in coping with multiple myeloma. I want you to know that you're part of a community of support, and we're here to help you. And we are simply a telephone call away, and that number is 1-800-813-4673, or you can visit our website at www.cancercare.org. So please do take advantage of these services and know that there's someone out there to answer your questions and concerns. I want to wish you all a very fine day, and thank you all for participating.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Have a wonderful day.